Now, on to our roundtable with even more reaction to Minister Louis Farrakhan's speech and a look at the roots of black comedy in a separate story. We're joined by Robert George, editorial writer at the New York Post, Callie Crossley, social and cultural commentator on the Boston television show Beat the Press, and Marcelo Suarez Orozco, professor of immigration studies at New York University. Everybody, nice to have you on. Are you there?
Yes.
Yes.
Okay, wake up. Well, wake up.
It's a Monday morning.
Wake up!
Listen, we've been talking, of course, about the final speech of the Nation of Islam leader, Louis Farrakhan, and you just heard Rabbi Stephen Leader. Let me start with you, Callie, and I would like to get your reaction to the reaction to the speech that we've heard so far.
Well, I think that it speaks about just what he said, the time of Minister Farrakhan's life and his looking in a different direction, because as he said, his time is up and he has to move forward. It also speaks to a mellowing of a certain point. I also think that back in the day, you know, the emphasis really was about self-help. It was for black people anyway. It was less about some of these other comments that he would make. And in fact, I think a lot of black people sort of put to the side some of those comments he made. Because they were so interested and attracted by the power of the self-help movement. It evidenced itself through the Nation and through Minister Farrakhan by the Nation's ability to just be able to be independent and say whatever. And I think that's what black people were attracted to. That does not mean to say that he was out of line making the kind of comments that he did, but I'm just saying that that was a lot of the power of it. And now that I think he gets to the end of his life, he looks back and he says, you know, here I am trying to do an international thing. And if you're going to reach internationally, you got to sort of reach across the table where you are as well. So that's my reaction to it.
Does his appearance yesterday change anything for you, Robert George, with regard to his legacy?
Not particularly. It seems to me that Minister Farrakhan's high point, his peak, if you will, obviously was with the Million Man March 12 years ago at this point. And I think there seemed at that moment a possibility that he was going to be able to take that particular platform and spread it into a broader political movement, and that did not seem to happen. So it seems to me that there's a little bit more reflection. There's certainly a mellowing of the rhetoric, if not in the length of the rhetoric, since it was your average 2-hour speech. But I mean, I think his legacy is what it is, and you're now starting to see, as the piece mentioned before, many black folks who had been looking at Nation of Islam are now going in traditional Islam directions, unless they're going back to their regular Christian roots.
Marcelo, as someone who was not black, I'm interested in hearing your two things. One, your reaction, of course, to what we are talking about with regard to Farrakhan, but whether or not you, as a non-black person, had a certain disconnect because it didn't directly affect you personally.
So, in terms of the responses to the speech, I think the consensus is, in general, right. Here, demography is destiny. He's entering a moment in his own life cycle. In the context of the changing dynamics, both within the United States and internationally, the changing dynamics of Islam that, in a way, have mellowed the message and brought to the fore the beginnings of a new agenda that I think will be increasingly relevant for the Nation of Islam. And really more broadly for the future of Islam in the United States. Keep in mind that 60% of all Muslims in the United States today are either immigrants or the children of immigrants. 40% are in the African-American community. So it just seems to me that that's one issue. In terms of the minister's impact beyond the African-American community, I think the issues that have come up are really the relevant issues. The Million March. I think the message of discipline, the message of respect, the message of autonomy is something that really resonated to many of us who are interested in religion, who are interested in race, and who are interested in American society, really took from this era the importance of the religious community, the importance of the discipline, and really of the autonomy.
You're listening to NPR's News at Notes. I'm Tony Cox. In case you are just tuning in, with me on today's roundtable are Robert George, editorial writer at the New York Post, Callie Crossley, social and cultural commentator on the Boston TV show Beat the Press, and Marcelo Suarez Orozco, professor of immigration studies at NYU. Here's another point I'd like to get to, and Rabbi Leder sort of made reference to it, Callie, and that's this. Does the minister's message resonate more or less so today, given the economic conditions of Black America, and how does that relate to the conditions out of which he and that movement grew? Rabbi Leder seemed to think that there were some falsehoods, if I'm getting him correctly, about the condition as described by Farrakhan back then.
Well, again, I have to say that, you know, there may well have been, but I think that what Black folks really resonated with was sort of the cast down your bucket where you are, or but more modern than that, that we can do it ourselves, and we are doing it ourselves, and we don't need anybody else to do it. And that's just something that's extremely attractive to a people who are constantly oppressed and who feel that their livelihoods and, in fact, you know, their whole life in so many ways is directed by a majority population.
But is that
That was the appeal. I mean, that was it.
But is that the appeal? Is that still in effect?
I think it's very I'm back to what Robert said about, you know, and actually Clarence Page said about not keying off of that Million Man March. If he had been able to really make that connection after the Million Man March based on what they always have stood for, which was the self-help and not be trying to do all the international stuff at the point, I think it would, yes, definitely have resonated. It still is very important today. There's just nobody out there demonstrating in a broad way that we can do it, and we are doing it. Well, I mean, back in the day, there was a bean pie on every corner, and people knew, you know, these people were independent. They didn't need anybody else.
That's true. But, you know, I'm starting to see people on the corner with bean pies again. I'm starting to see young men standing out there with the final call in their hand again after not having seen them for, you know, a number of years, at least here in the West Coast. Robert, what's your observation? Are they beginning to have more of a presence, less of a presence, about the same?
I think I noticed somebody distributing the final call maybe about a month or so ago. I haven't seen them that frequently. Admittedly, when I did see them, it was up in Harlem, so that certainly kind of makes sense. And again, they just, whether it's distributing the final call or just in terms of their seeming to be part of the national dialogue, it does not seem to be as much of a presence. And I think, frankly, part of that has been obviously Minister Farrakhan's illness, but even in the years before he became ill, has been kind of this ongoing failure to try and find someone who has been considered a potential successor. For a while, it was Conrad Muhammad who ran Temple No. 7 here in New York, but then they had a falling out, and then it was somebody else, and now they think it's one of his sons. So I mean, I think there has really been a real vacuum for at least the last half dozen years.
All right, let's move on to another topic. There's no easy way to segue into the Oscars, but we have to talk about them because they were last night.
And
we
Minister Farrakhan gave a great performance, I thought, yesterday. You know, 2 hours.
We are going to have a report actually from Tanya Hart a little later in the program talking about the Oscars. But let me start with you, Marcelo, because it seemed to me that the Latino contingent did very well at the Oscars last night.
Yes, it did. The Mexicans, the South Americans, this was a good day. In terms of the awards for the music, in terms of the awards for, well, Babel took some awards as well. So it was in general.
Pan's Labyrinth.
Pan's Labyrinth.
Pan's Labyrinth from Mexico.
Yeah, true.
Labyrinth,
yeah.
Right. These were both Mexican productions. And so it was a global day in terms of how the kind of diversity. I think, as somebody said, there were even a few Americans in the...
yes, they did say that. That's funny. Let me put this question to you in the time that we have left. Because as minorities, we all like to see minorities do well. There's no secret to that. And there were some who we thought might win who did not win. And we're going to talk about that with Tanya Hart a little later. But here's my question, Kelly, to you first. Are we guilty of supporting minorities even though they may not be the best ones or the ones that really should win?
We may be guilty of that on some occasion, but last night was not the occasion. I think that everybody who was nominated was really talented and should have been there, and so I could feel full-out pride in it. That was just not the case last night. Of course, sometimes.
So you were upset Eddie Murphy didn't win then? You were upset?
Yeah, I really actually was quite surprised by that. And these were all tough categories. And I think that people, they had different performances, but they had very strong performances. So it could have gone either way. I understand that. I actually think what happened with Eddie was Norbit or Norbit.
Bingo.
Whatever that horrible,
you got it.
Horrible
you got
movie
it.
Is that came
Worst
out.
Sense
you know,
of timing and releasing a movie.
I know. And it's Paramount. And they should have known better, isn't it? That's the studio that had Dreamgirl. So I don't get it. But anyway, I think that messed him over.
Well, what about the song, Melissa Etheridge's song, which beat out three Dreamgirls songs, Robert? What about
I
that?
Like
I think
song.
They,
I
think there were two things. I think there were two things going on there. First of all, I think the three Dreamgirls songs split the vote in a significant way. And I think the fact is that the Academy Awards, the Oscars, were willing and ready and more than happy to shower as much love on Al Gore as possible. And you saw
yes.
that you saw that when he came out and made a joke with Leonardo DiCaprio, and then when he actually won the award for Inconvenient Truth. And I think that spilled over to Melissa Etheridge. And I agree completely with Callie. I think the timing on Norbit was absolutely horrendous. And the people kind of said, you know, we want to give this guy, when he's dressed in the fat suit and doing the woman thing and all this other kind of stuff. I think it was a shame. That said, I did see Little Miss Sunshine, and Alan Arkin did a good job.
Yeah, he was great. He was great.
Absolutely was good.
But Eddie was equally good. He could have won, you know.
And speaking to your point earlier, Tony, I think it was again everybody who was nominated appropriately, and I think it is very interesting that you know after going some 60 years before a man was nominated, was a black man won for best actor. We've had three in the last 6 years, which is not bad.
That is an interesting.
I want to make one point
Go
on
ahead.
Behalf of Marcello, and Go that ahead. Is he should have said, Marcello, you should have said this. They're confusing Latinos and where they're from. They had to correct that last
night.
Yes,
they did.
So maybe, so maybe people will understand. Y'all don't all come from the same place.
All Latinos are not from Mexico.
And, suggested that Penelope is from Mexico. Penelope is Spanish.
Penelope Cruz isn't Puerto Rican? You know,
oh,
I thought everybody was Puerto Rican.
It's time to go. It is time to go. From our New York bureau is
not Puerto Rican either.
Robert George, editorial writer at the New York Post. Joining us by phone today, Marcello Suarez-Orozco, professor of immigration studies at New York University. I don't know where you're from, Marcello. Where are you from?
I'm from South America.
South America. Okay, we'll take that. And at Harvard University in Cambridge, Massachusetts, Callie Crossley, social and cultural commentator on the Boston television show Beat the Press. Everybody, thank you so much.
Thanks a lot.
Thank you.
Thank you.